food share benefits in Wisconsin, popularly known as food stamps, have been a hot topic in the state capitol this year. As part of a special session on public assistance, the legislature passed 9 of 10 measures proposed by Governor Walker. Some of the changes to food share that made it to Walker's desk include raising the program's work requirement, drug testing, and an asset limit for people receiving food stamps. David Lee is the executive director for Feeding Wisconsin, a network of food banks around the state. He's with us to take a closer look at food share benefits. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Governor Walker said in introducing all of this that he wants to see the food share program and public assistance in general function like a trampoline and not a hammock. And that's reflective of a long-term concern that people are grow dependent on something like food assistance, and there's a disincentive to move away from it. What do you think about that line of thinking when it comes to food assistance?
Well, I think for the vast majority of people, when you look at the data, SNAP or food share is a trampoline. It provides the grocery buying benefits that people need to have the food they need in order to work, learn, and live healthy lives. I mean, I think what's really interesting about a lot of this rhetoric is people are not talking about the success of food share as a hunger fighting program, because those successes are unassailable, but rather they're trying to talk about its failure as a jobs program, which it is not, right? It is a nutrition program aimed at connecting people to nutrition benefits so that they can have, you know, a very basic package of benefits that they can spend at the grocery store to get food in order to work, learn, and play.
And some of the changes we mentioned include raising the work requirements for people, some people receiving food share. This is mainly adults who don't have children who are receiving food share benefits, raising required hours from 20 to 30 per week for either working or getting job training. Can you talk about the impact of these required work limits?
Sure. So in 2015, the state re-implemented a work requirement for single adults without children, known the term of art as able-bodied adults without dependents. And that required single adults, again, without children, to work or participate in job training for about 20 hours, for 20 hours a week in order to continue to be eligible for food share benefits. Since that work requirement was re-implemented, about 85,000 people lost benefits. Due to, you know, maybe they didn't want to participate in the job training program, or they couldn't find enough hours for work, or as some of the data has shown, they just weren't notified properly, or they were hard to get in contact with. I mean, I think one of the things about this population of single adults without children is that they are some of the hardest folks to reach with benefits, right? So there's that portion of the work requirement. In the special session bills, one of them would increase the work hours up to 30. So that would mean that if you're already working 20 hours a week, you would have to find an extra 10 hours of work hours or participate in 10 extra hours of job training. And I got to tell you, you know, we run a food share outreach program in our shop, and a lot of the folks that we talk to are working. They're working 20, 25 hours a week. They just can't find those remaining hours in their area, or they're not available from their employer or whatnot. And I feel like a lot of those folks might be caught in a real jam, right? And I think this is also particularly troubling for families with children. A lot of the folks that we've helped have children, and they're working, you know, like I said, somewhere below 30 hours a week, and getting that extra last 2 or 3 hours may not be available from their employer. And also then taking the extra time to go participate in a job training program that may or may not help them feels like it could be a really big lift for them.
Were there success stories maybe related to the work requirements in the past where people left food share because they upped their work hours, got a job, and were able to buy their own food?
Yeah. So, you know, the work requirement since 2015 connected about 25,000 people to jobs. When you dive into the data, it showed that they were working an average of about 33 hours a week and making an average wage of $12 or $13, which is above the state minimum wage. You know, for those 25,000 people, I think that's really great. And we hope that they continue on and are able to parlay these jobs into something a lot more permanent. But, you know, I would note that making $12 to $13 an hour at 30 hours a week is still somewhere on the order of $22,000 a year before taxes. So, you know, it's not like these jobs are, you know, creating a new middle class, right? I mean, the folks even coming in through this work requirement are still working jobs that they still might otherwise qualify for food share.
Talking to David Lee with Feeding Wisconsin. He's executive director there. It's a statewide network of food banks looking at food assistance in Wisconsin and some recent changes. And David, it seems like people across the political spectrum do think there's a common goal, getting people to be as self-sufficient as possible when that's possible. From where you're sitting with Feeding Wisconsin, what's the best way for someone who's receiving food aid now to get from there to being employed and being able to afford food comfortably?
I think that's a really complex question, right? If I had that answer, I don't know that I would be in this position. You know, I think we've always said that a good job is the best anti-hunger tool. A good paying job with good health care, stable housing is the greatest hunger fighting and the greatest anti-poverty tool. What we do know, though, is that in today's, you know, dynamic world and quickly changing environment, sometimes people may be caught in a position where they may not have access to that good job, or those jobs may have left their community, and yet they're still tied to those communities because, you know, that's where they've lived and that's where their families are. And so I think having a one size fits all policy solution as it relates to requiring people to work for food share benefits doesn't actually address many of the real world concerns that people have and the real world challenges that people have on a day to day basis as it relates to getting access to those good jobs or the skills to attain those good jobs that are clearly out there, right? I mean, we are in a state where we're near full employment, right? We're at or near 4% or under 4% unemployment. It feels like by increasing the requirements for work, particularly for communities that might experience very high bars for challenge, high challenges to get those jobs, I think that's that feels tough for us.
I want to bring on a caller now. Laura is with us in Manitowoc. Laura, hi.
Hi. So here's my question. I do not have to take advantage of any kind of food stamps or anything like that, thankfully, but I am a part-time worker. And every time I approach my supervisor to work more than 29 hours a week, the response I get is, we can't let you work more than 29 hours a week because of the Affordable Care Act, which is another way of saying we don't want to give you benefits, so we're going to keep you under 29 hours a week. So doesn't this requirement to have people work more than, have them work 30 hours per week, doesn't that come in conflict with the Affordable Care Act? Aren't those two going to, you know, preclude some people from, people are going to have to make a choice between health care and employment.
Laura, thanks for the call. David, is moving from 29 to 30 a tough obstacle?
I would say that for some employers, given that for some employers, it definitely does raise costs per employee. And I think, you know, as we think about the benefits that come with having a full-time job, which, you know, include good some sort of health care and some of the other ancillary benefits that come with that, it certainly does strike me that for some employers that may be a challenge. And I think that's also where we sort of come at this, right? That, like, there might be a lot of folks like the caller just now who are working and are kept artificially low on hours because getting them past a certain point would create higher costs. So that's why we feel that this new 30-hour requirement could be a real challenge for many folks due to no fault of their own, right? They want those hours, they're just not available or they can't get them.
David, I wanted to ask you about another change, the asset limit. We're saying You can't get food assistance if you have a car over a certain value or a house over a certain value. Can you talk about how that would work and what you think about it?
Yeah, so the asset limit would create an asset test, and which means that you would have to prove that you don't have a car that's worth over $20,000 or a house worth more than, I think, two times the median home value in Wisconsin. So that's somewhere on the order of, so for cars, it's $20,000, and for homes, I think it's somewhere on the order of $300,000. Here's the thing. For the vast majority of people on food share, for all of them, they don't have any assets, right? They have an average of $333 in the bank. So for them, this will become another bureaucratic red tape for them to have to cross in order to get benefits. And that's a challenge and a barrier for entry. I think the talking point is that we're trying to keep the lottery winners out of this program. The sheer fact of it is that there aren't any lottery winners in the program. And if there are, the OIG, the Office of Inspector General, has found them and has rooted them out, because the fraud detection protocols in the food share program is extremely high, right? We are at a fraud rate in the SNAP program of somewhere on the order of 1.5%. And I think it's really important to hold on this for a second, because if you had any private industry coming on this show talking about their loss rate at 1.5%, I think we'd be pretty happy about that. This is really, I think, this could actually, I think, if you really think about it, unintentionally ensnare folks who worked hard and played by the rules their whole lives and have maybe found some job dislocation due to no fault of their own, and suddenly are caught in this weird choice of you know, maybe having a nice car that they'd bought with a job previous, and suddenly they would have to like sell their car in order to qualify for nutrition assistance benefits, just to bridge them through a tough time in their life. And I don't know that is how we should be writing policy.
We'll leave it there for now. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Rob.
That's David Lee, Executive Director of Feeding Wisconsin. He joined us for a look at the state's food share program and the path to self-sufficiency.